Thank you, Mike, and thank you to the United Soybean Board for having me here this afternoon. Our Deputy Secretary gave a pretty eloquent overview of the USDA Buyer Preferred Program this morning, far more eloquent than I could give. But what I will try to do this afternoon is provide some of the nuts and bolts and some of the details behind the overview that she gave you this morning. So the four things I'd like to talk about this afternoon are to give you some background on our program, to talk a little bit more about some of the details about how our voluntary labeling initiative works, to talk about some of the elements of our federal procurement preference program, and finally to talk about some of the things that we're working on this year. So you've heard a lot of people throw the word buyer preferred around. This is our made-up name for the program in Section 9002 of the Farm Bill, the Buyer-Based Markets Program. Its goal is to identify and seek new markets for buyer-based products. And as you've heard, there are two major elements to the program. There's a voluntary labeling program that's aimed to increase the demand for buyer-based products in the commercial space and consumer marketplaces, and a federal procurement preference program that's aimed to do that in the federal buying space. I'm going to go through some of these slides on the background a little bit quickly. You've heard a lot about what bio-based products are. I don't think I need to read the definition here again for you. You've also heard a number of people talk about some of the benefits of our program. We talk about the climate change impact reduction in terms of the carbon footprint. You heard Deputy Secretary Merrigan and others talk about the reduction of need for importing petroleum from overseas, and finally, the benefits of creating green jobs in rural America. This is a map of our bio-based manufacturers and vendors. As you can see, they're spread pretty well across the country. There's a very, very strong representation in the Northeast and Midwest, and you can see Ohio is pretty much all covered up. The program authorities for our program, the 2008 Farm Bill, which added strengthening amendments to our 2002 original enabling legislation, and a couple of presidential executive orders that mandate sustainable acquisition and purchasing of bio-based products as one measure of that sustainable acquisition. This is our voluntary labeling program, which is designed to try to make it easier for consumers to identify products that have bio-based content. The program is just about 5 weeks old. We had regulations in the Federal Register in late January with a 30-day effective period. We actually began accepting label applications on February 21, so we're about 5 weeks into this. People have talked about the purpose of this. I think you've heard a lot about this. It's to expand the demand for these products, to try to serve as an unbiased source of information about bio-based content, to help manufacturers market these products, and also to help cross-fertilize our federal procurement preference program, make it easier for our federal purchasers to identify bio-based products. Okay, here are some of the program essentials. The labeling program went into effect, as I said, in February. It's strictly on a voluntary basis. It's when manufacturers and vendors choose to apply for this, that they're not obliged to. The phrase that you see appearing on our label, USDA certified bio-based product, is one that is mandated by law. That phrase is in the Farm Bill, and that needs to appear on the label, and that the label indicates that the product meets or exceeds the bio-based content required for product certification, which I'll talk about in just a minute. The label applies to products, packaging, or both, and so there are really three categories of label, one for just product, one for just packaging, and one for both. And consistent with the legislative intent behind the 2002 Farm Bill, we've excluded mature market products, those products that are bio-based but had a very significant market share from from a long time ago. We've done this in the Federal Procurement Preference Program and defined mature market as of 1972. And we've carried that same definition forward into our labeling program. So how much bio-based content do you need to qualify for our label? The bio-based products that we have established standards for fall into two broad categories. The products that fall under one of our 50 designated categories for federal procurement preference, each of those 50 product categories has its own percentage of minimum bio-based content. And if your product falls into one of those categories, to be labeled, to be eligible for the label, it needs to have the bio-based content at the level of the designated category. So, for example, if we had a particular lubricant that we designated for federal procurement preference at 83% bio-based content, to get your product labeled, you'd need that amount of bio-based content if you'd fall into that category. The second broad category of products are those for which there is no procurement preference designation, and for all of those products, the threshold is 25%. We did create an option for products that don't fall into one of our designated categories that are below 25%. Manufacturers and vendors can make a demonstration to us that some number other than 25% makes sense in their particular case, and we'll review those petitions on a case-by-case basis. You've seen a lot of pictures of our label image here. It's a kind of a sun, sea, and earth motif reflecting all the different potential sources of bio-based products. For those of you who followed our regulatory development in the Federal Register and read our proposed rule, you'll know that the image we proposed was pretty different from this. It was actually a green leaf. And we were on the verge of putting that into our final regulation when we saw the Federal Register notice from the Federal Trade Commission about their green marketing guides. And we read their notice and were concerned that the image of the green leaf might be misconstrued as us being what's called an eco-label. And while we believe that bio-based products have a number of desirable environmental properties, our labeling program wasn't intended to try to certify environmental properties. It was intended to certify bio-based content. And so we contacted the Federal Trade Commission, and we conferred with them, and they said they thought we'd be better if we got away from the green leaf. So we did, and we went back to the drawing board, and this is the image that we came up with. For those of you who follow the way the regulatory process works in Washington, if you develop what's considered a major regulation, you have the opportunity to have the Office of Management and Budget review that regulation from the White House. And our rule was considered a major rule, and we had the opportunity to have our friends at OMB review it. They felt that it was important to put an additional piece on the label. You see this little FP in the put a corner next to our visual image. That's standing for federally procured. Any of the products that fall under one of our designated categories under the Federal Procurement Preference Program will get that FP on their label, and the purpose is to identify to federal purchasers that this is a product that's part of the Federal Procurement Preference Program. Some of the initial market research that we did and some of the common sense thinking was that this was likely to be much more confusing than elucidating to the largest volume of people who would see our labels, and we explained our views and our market research to the Office of Management and Budget, and I guess I could say we came in no better than second in that argument. So when people have veto power over your program. You sometimes compromise and do it their way. And so that's where the FP identifier comes in. In fairness to OMB, they in return for us giving way on this, they were quite accommodating on some of the other parts of our program that they initially disagreed with us on. So this was kind of a deal we made to get our rule out. We've set up a paperless application process on our website, which is www.biopreferred.gov. If you go to that website, and you can follow a link to the application process, there's a relatively simple application that you can fill out online with a modest amount of information about your product and name and address and so forth. And as Deputy Secretary Merrigan said, we've set up the program to have a 60-day turnaround on applications. We've created a partnership with ASTM International to do independent third-party verification of the biobased content in our product. So the way the process works is you'll fill out an application and we will review that. We have a partnership actually with Iowa State University, and they will review the initial application, make sure that everything is complete and looks right, and then we'll refer that to folks at ASTM International, and they will contact you about getting your product tested. And once the test results come back and get reviewed, then assuming everything works out, meets our requirements, we will provide the certification to use the label, and that's what we've done for about 60 products as of last week. The label designation, the certification, will be valid for as long as you continue to manufacture the product in the same way. If there are changes in your manufacturing process that would change something from your initial application, then you'll have to come back to us and get recertified. We hope going forward that we'll be able to set up an auditing program and look at some of the things that we've issued certifications for and delve a little more deeply and make sure we haven't made any mistakes. But we think the partnership with ASTM and the way we've set this up will give us a pretty high degree of confidence that we'll be certifying products that are what they purport to be. When we first talked to ASTM about how this program was going to work, we felt that we initially decided we would try to retest all the products to make sure that they went through an appropriate chain of custody and had a very, very high degree of confidence in the testing results. We got a number of complaints from people who had recently tested their product and why we were making them go back to test again. We went back to the drawing board and set up what we call a legacy application process, so that if you've had your product tested by an independent lab within a year of when our application process started, you can work with us to get those testing results accepted without retesting, assuming you'll provide a little bit of extra documentation about how the sample was taken, the chain of custody, and so forth. Here's a quick snapshot of where we are with our applications as of Tuesday afternoon. We'd received 377 applications. We've initially reviewed and 165 of those, and those are undergoing laboratory testing. We've got 151 that we're still reviewing, and we've certified 61. So, again, given that we're 5 weeks into the process, I think we're going to be able to make good on our 60-day turnaround. Let me turn and talk about the other side of the program, the Federal Procurement Preference Program. The federal government, as you know, is a very large purchaser. We've got $500 billion annually in goods and services, and a lot of our products are used on in our own buildings, and we've got half a million buildings that we operate. So this is, as Deputy Secretary Merrigan said, not the be all end all, but it is a significant marketplace. We've designated so far 50 product categories through 6 rounds of rulemaking, more than 5,000 products represented. You see the major categories where these products fit in terms of industrial sector. A couple of things about the Federal Procurement Preference Program. We designate these product categories in a rulemaking process, and this follows the Administrative Procedures Act, and again, we also have that opportunity to get the Office of Management and Budget to review our rules. Because of all the hoops we have to jump through, it's a somewhat extended process, and I think there may have been some confusion about the time frame about the two different parts of our program. The labeling part of our program is a relatively simple expedited process that doesn't involve other parts of the government besides USDA, and we do try to do that in a 60-day period. If you have a product that you want to try to get designated for the Federal Procurement Preference Program, that's going to be a longer time frame exercise. You'll work through getting the product tested and evaluated, and then we'll have to run through a rulemaking process to propose a rule, take public comments, revise the rule, and promulgate it, and in between have our friends at OMB review it for us. So that process does not take 60 days. It's closer to a year, sometimes a year and a half. I wish there were a way to make that faster, but there are requirements we've got to meet that we have no control over. You heard Deputy Secretary Merrigan talk about our Secretary Vilsack kind of promote this program. At his confirmation hearing, Secretary Vilsack was prodded to contact the cabinet by Senator Harkin, and he sent out a letter a year ago, April, and then just this last April sent out a second letter trying to promote our program within the entire federal government, particularly in some of the departments and agencies that are some of the largest purchasers of goods and services, like the Defense Department, the Veterans Administration, the Department of the Interior, so on. The other thing about the Federal Procurement Preference Program is that it applies to both goods and services. While it's true that the federal government does purchase a lot of products, on a dollar volume basis, we purchase a lot more services. And the Procurement Preference Program applies both to the federal government and its contractors, so that if the Department of Agriculture hires a janitorial contractor to come clean buildings, that contractor is obliged to use bio-based products, just as we would be if we purchased them directly. Some of the tools that we've put in place to try to promote the program, in terms of sales in the federal sector, we have the product category designation process. We've put together a business guide for manufacturers. Iowa State University puts together an online product catalog, which you'll find at biopreferred.gov. Again, aimed at trying to make it easier to find bio-based products. We develop online and classroom training, which we aim at federal procurement officials. We've tried to put together contract template language to try to make it easier to pluck some of the language into these contracts, the service contracts, requiring our federal contractors to use bio-based products. And when we get phone calls from, we tend to field phone calls both from federal agencies and manufacturers, and to the extent that they have issues that the other could help, we try to match them up and try to solve two problems at the same time. These are some of the examples of some of the training that we put together, working with the Federal Acquisition Institute and the Defense Logistics Agency. These are some of the larger purchasing agencies, to try to train federal procurement officials. The federal procurement process is pretty complicated. There's an exceptionally long and boring regulation called the Federal Acquisition Regulations that have to be followed. There are literally dozens and dozens of requirements, and the requirement for bio-based products is one of among many, and we're constantly fighting for attention of procurement officials to try to remind them of all the requirements, because it's hard to keep dozens and dozens of things in your head all at the same time. I mentioned our website. We've undertaken some efforts to try to make this a little bit more user-friendly. It's the portal to all the information elements in our program, including the application for the label. I also mentioned our online product catalog, which flows from our website. We have a life cycle checklist tool that was actually put together by the USB folks that helps potential buyers evaluate on kind of a common sense, relatively easy to understand basis, some of the life cycle impacts of the products. It may be that some of these products, if you look at the price on the container, they may be higher than some of their petroleum-based counterparts, but it may be that you need to use less per usage, or that if you look over some of the longer-term life cycle questions, you can see that these things, if not immediately cost-effective on the initial price, over the course of their usage, are really a better buy. And this is a tool to try to let people understand what the true cost of using these products may be. I mentioned earlier, we put together some contract templates on the federal side for some of the service type contracts where a lot of our bio-based product categories lie. Let me talk now about some of the things that are going on with our program now. We're here today to help launch our labeling program. The other big project that we have underway is revising our program guidelines. The program guidelines for the Federal Procurement Preference Program came out in 2005. They're coming up on 6 years old, and if that weren't reason enough to go back and take a look at them, the 2008 Farm Bill put some requirements into law that make us have to go back and revise our program guidelines. In particular, the 2008 Farm Bill explicitly directs us to designate intermediate feedstocks and chemicals, some of the ingredients that are used to make finished bio-based products. And we had the authority to designate those in 2002, but what the 2008 Farm Bill does, it suggests that once we designate intermediates and feedstocks, then the downstream products that are made from 50% or more of those designated feedstocks would automatically become subject to the Federal Procurement Preference Program. So by designating these intermediates and feedstocks, it's a way of leveraging a lot more products into our program. The mechanism for doing that is something that doesn't exist within our current program guidelines, and so we need to revise them in order to do that. The other area that we're looking at with respect to our program guidelines is the designation of complex assembly products. If you have something, for example, like the chairs you're sitting on, that have a fabric component and a wood or metal component, something that's that heterogeneous is not subject to the ASTM testing method for bio-based content. And so there's no way following the ASTM standard to determine the bio-based content of a complex product. We'd like to find a way to bring those into our federal procurement preference program. And eventually, we believe that ASTM is going to be revising their standard to include complex products. But we're going to move forward in our program guidelines and come up with a way to calculate that based on a weighted average of the individual components. And so we can start designating complex products into our federal procurement preference program. And at some point in the future, if ASTM does in fact amend their standard, we'll find a way to make our rules and the ASTM standard dovetail. That's really all I wanted to give you in terms of an overview of the program. There's some contact information here for myself, for Kate Lewis, who's the one who's organized most of the activities associated with our label, and our program manager, Ron Buchholz. And as I mentioned to some of you earlier this morning, Ron's just become a grandfather, and that afforded me the opportunity to come here and take his place. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.